domain of expertise, or the psych people who say we didn't address the diabetes because that's outside our range of expertise, and we're trying to push these things back together, and maybe in ways of setting goals that we want to accomplish, we have to create the carrot to push people to say, well, if systems right now are not organized in a way to allow clinicians to work with people who can accomplish a housing goal, then we need to reorganize the system that allows that outcome to take place. And if we don't challenge ourselves with creating that expectable outcome, we're never going to push the system or create any incentive in the system that forces them to push these pieces of the system together. And we'll always say that's outside our domain of control. That's just
why the issue is that we are requiring provision of services, but we are not requiring that the person actually makes, finds employment.
Despite all the external constraints on successfully linking people to those services and resources, is there evidence you can point to that suggests that when the services, the assessment is done and the services are indeed offered, there is a link to better outcomes in terms of mental health outcomes?
I don't think that I know of a linkage that is that direct. There is linkage that says that providing housing, that getting people housed improves their mental health outcomes, and providing them with an evidence-based, like for example, a supported employment intervention will both improve their employment outcomes as well as their mental health or substance abuse outcomes. I don't know if there is linkage from the more general.
Well, how about even an intermediate linkage just between offering the services, and even if we know that there are some people who are in an impossible situation and you just aren't going to be able to successfully get them placed in appropriate housing, that there's a reasonable proportion who would benefit, and then we can tell the story of how that does get linked to better mental health. But to what extent does offering end up actually producing a better housing outcome?
It's a necessary precondition. Whether it's sufficient or not is, I think, open for discussion. It also would be a difficult proposition to test in the sense that it would be difficult to design a study where you randomly assigned people to either get being a conversation or being offered housing assistance versus not getting housing assistance.
Anne, did you have a comment or question?
Yes, I do. As a provider, I would think that the outcome would not be so much if I recommended a particular housing agency or employment agency or something like that, but rather with the follow-up, at the next visit with that patient, would I then say, what kind of feedback did you get from the housing authority? What kind of feedback did you get from the employment people? I feel like it. What's proposed falls short of anything that's useful, because the usefulness would be if the person actually connected. And, I may talk about that for several visits as things are going on. So just offering it just feels to me like that's incomplete.
I would also comment, if we're going to decide in mental health that services related to employment and housing are part of the care process, then we need to hold ourselves accountable to the outcome being actual employment and housing. And if we're saying it's just too hard, so we're not going to do that, then I think we need to rethink why we're in the business in the first place.
And actually, building on that point, my understanding was the developer was stating that because the differential in being able to offer housing or employment or actually getting housing or employment was one of the reasons. I mean, that can be adjusted for in the analysis, but I think that that's actually what needs to be highlighted. I mean, if you have a group of providers in a state that are doing a very good job of offering it and there's something preventing people from getting the services, that needs to be highlighted. Mm-hmm. And so it's a quality outcome for a different level than the provider, but it's an important quality outcome.
Hmm. Ken, I think Ken on the phone was trying to make a comment.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I just wanted to comment, you know, the dilemma is the issue of where the, you know, the quality is. And if the burden is placed on the clinician or the person who is getting serviced, and if your dilemma that is described in terms of actually having control over housing or employment is very, very problematic. It's placed at a higher level, and there are examples of this right now. Actually, in the UK right now, there is a major effort to make sure folks who have been excluded from the labor market, greatest distance from the labor market, actually included, and they're doing that by measuring the percentage of people who are at a present time excluded from the labor market, working to increase them. So, you know, a way to think about this would be how many people are currently getting Social Security, disability, who are able to get back into the labor market and move beyond that. Now, there's obviously lots of problems systematically making that happen, but I think that whoever talked earlier about the fact that unless we hold larger system accountable, we can work forever at people jobs if there's nobody working to actually get them into the job that's being made available to them, never get anywhere.
Jeff?
I'd like to go back to the comment previously about whether this is really an adequate outcomes measure or not. I think an outcome that really reflects patients would be getting housing or getting employment. And I would be 100% that's within our scope, and we should be looking at that. This measure, however, I'm not comfortable with as an outcomes measure for a variety of reasons that we've already discussed. So I think what we should do, at least from a process perspective, is go ahead and say, is it in or out of scope, and then go on to the next step if it's voted to continue with it.
So shall we vote whether it's in or out of scope at this point? Okay. Are there any comments from the public?
No.
How about the Community Mental Health Association? Are you on the phone still?
Yeah. I mean, I think we struggle with some of the same things that you've been discussing in terms of the importance of that being a measurement, but exactly how this measurement accomplishes that, there's, I think, some questions. But in terms of importance, definitely very supportive of including these types of measure and outcomes.
Okay. I would like to make one other comment, going back to the discussion that we had before about whether or not we can be held accountable as providers for things that are maybe outside of our control, and what Rich said about that we're not going to change anything unless we do hold ourselves accountable. From my perspective and my experience as having been a payer for performance, and what I would say is that even with something like mammography, you cannot, a payer would set a standard in performance that would be never 100%. You would always expect there to be a human patient factor that the provider cannot be held accountable for. So your goal may be 80% of achieving the specific goal. And what you're being held accountable for or measured against, risk assessing, again, adjusting for risk assessment, would be how you compare to other like providers in meeting, in getting toward that goal, and whether you're improving toward that goal, not being accountable for 100%. So in this instance, I think it's very important that we recognize, as Rich said, that we really need to focus on the outcome and, of course, not expect that we will be able to reach 100% of it, but certainly we could compare against like risk-adjusted populations, like and how we compare against other systems or providers in accomplishing the ultimate goal, and in addition, how much we are improving within our own domain. So from a payer perspective, that's what I looked for. And it reconciles with what we're talking about, which is holding ourselves accountable for the outcome, but yet not being expected to achieve 100%.
I also think this is an area in which, if we look beyond the provider level to the mental health system, mental health systems in many states, states or counties, depending on how it's organized, control a significant amount of resources for housing. A very significant percentage of the supportive housing that exists in the United States today is funded, receives funding through the mental health system. And in fact, the VA currently has 30,000 vouchers for homeless veterans for whom VA medical centers are the gatekeepers. So particularly with respect to the VA has an extraordinarily high level of influence today over access to actual housing resources. And then secondly, I would say in California, the AB 34, AB 2034 programs that were highlighted in the New Freedom Commission report as well, held themselves accountable for achieving consumer outcomes in housing status and in employment status. And I think what that really did was to drive counties to examine and to compare the extent to which they were improving outcomes for consumers, whether by helping the consumer qualify for housing, helping consumers get on waiting lists from day one of a crisis rather than the day before they were being discharged, or by actually investing in creating housing. So I just want to echo what's been said, that when you focus on the consumer outcome, the system reexamines how the system is gatekeeping with respect to access to housing or employment opportunities, or changes its investment strategy, because paying for housing, if it reduces hospitalizations or if it gets you better outcomes, may be a better way to use the resources of the system.
One other thing that I would add is, should we decide that this is not an outcome because it is to be recommended because it's considered to be a process outcome, I would recommend that we make a strong statement that we do believe that this is a gap in measurement right now.
I agree with that, and I want to also comment that we are in King County, where I'm from, being held accountable for outcomes related to employment and housing if you have supported employment or supported a housing program. So it's possible to do, and echoing what Tricia was, that we're not held to 80% employment. It's a, you know, there are places that are seeing 10%, but they're looking for improvement.
Gosh, I wish you'd submitted your measure.
Yeah, I don't think it would pass this group, but it's a start.
Okay, any other? Any other discussion? I think that what we're what we are looking for at this point is a in scope, out of scope vote. Do you agree?
Yes.
Okay. So for this is measurement number 12 now that we've been discussing. 21. I don't know why I keep...
Five. Five, isn't it?
No, five was...
Yes,
five.
Five is services offered.
No. That's separate housing or employment status or office five. Services for their needs.
Five.
Five?
Five?
All right, I thought we did the other way.
No, yeah.
Oh, you're right. Okay. So we're on five services offered. Okay, excellent. Sorry. So we are voting on number five, services, whether services are offered by the clinician. How many vote that this is in scope as an outcome measure?
I vote as an intermediate outcome measure.
I want
to hold out.
That's okay.
Okay. Yeah. So we have one vote for intermediate outcome measure. How about votes for out of scope as an outcome measure?
No, I mean,
I wish it were
12.
But I concur with what you said, Maureen.
Were there any abstentions?
Yeah.
Okay, Ian abstained. One abstention. And how about Ken on the phone? Did you have a vote?
Out of scope.
Out of scope. Okay, thank you. And then we would maybe entertain a recommendation that Maureen might put forward regarding this issue as a gap. Would you like to say something about that we could vote on?
Sure. Thanks. What I would say is that this work group recognizes the importance of assessing for and intervening with housing and employment as indicated in the New Freedom Commission, the President's New Freedom Commission on Mental Health, and that we believe that there is a need for the development of a measure that actually measures improvements in homelessness and employment from an outcomes perspective as opposed to an intervention perspective. Anyone have anything to add to that? Please do.
Okay, so Maureen's recommendation.
This is, and I just want to.
And I would just add parenthetically, I keep being told that it's about to come out, but CMHS is also about to release an evidence-based practice toolkit on supportive housing. So there is a significant body of evidence. It's just that we need to get to outcome measures.
Okay. Any further discussion on Maureen's recommendation? Would we like to vote to... on that recommendation, that this group make that recommendation to NQF? All in favor?
Anybody know?
Favor.
Yeah.
Ken is in favor. Any no's or abstentions? Okay, unanimous. Thank you. And now we'll move to number 21? 21, which is the associated measure, and this is assessment of psychosocial needs. So this was the actual whether or not the clinician did use the assessment tool. So I think we'll take a vote on this one, on whether or not it is in or out of scope as an outcome measure. But before we do that, we would like to invite public comment.
No comment.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to vote on... all who think this is in scope as an outcome measure, number 21, raise your hand. All who think this is out of scope, raise your hand. Any abstentions? You're out of scope, right?
Out of scope.
Okay. So this was voted as unanimous out of scope. Thank you.
I was out of scope, just so you know.
Oh, thank you very much, Ken. And thank you very much to the measure developers, Kate and Carol, I believe it was, who put this forward. And your submission has resulted in a recommendation to NQF that that measurement of homelessness and resolution of homelessness and employment are extremely important measures, with a recommendation that NQF pursue this as important outcome measures. So your work was really well worth the submission. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, at this point, I'm going to tell you what the rest of the schedule is, okay? We have, at 1 o'clock, we have University of Washington on the phone, which is a new measure, number 14, which is in work group 3. Oh, no, it's not work group 3.
Four.
Work group 4. The measure is psychiatrist-rated assessment of psychiatric inpatients' clinical status. So that is at 1 o'clock when the measure developer will be on the phone. At 1:30, we have Western Psych on the phone, and they were on the phone yesterday but couldn't hear much of the conversation. They submitted the 3 readmission measures, the 48-hour, 7-day, 30-day readmission measures. So they would like to just have a recap of what our discussion and decision was and maybe have a little discussion about that, and Joel has graciously agreed to provide that recap of our discussion. Right. So that will be at 1:30. The only other thing we have as far as a measure is concerned is number 47, which is inpatient consumer survey. The measure developer we do not think is able to join us. That is in group number 3, number 47. And please?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is the measure developer for the Inpatient Consumer Survey.
Oh, well, excellent.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
I was wondering if I was on the line correctly. This is great.
Okay. So, now the only other issue is that we haven't broken for lunch yet, and it's 4:45. And you're on the phone. We could do this now, get lunch, and then at 1 o'clock or as soon thereafter... So we'll do this now. Do the do number 47 while the measure developer is on the phone, and then break for lunch and get the 1 o'clock people, what, University of Washington, on the phone?
Yeah.
Or do you want to take maybe a 5-minute break right now to get lunch and come back and do it while we do eat lunch while 47? So would that be okay with you, measure developer, number 47?
Fine. My name's Lucille.
Oh, that's much easier. Thank you very much,
door
Lucille. It's too bad that we can't offer you lunch over the phone. So we're just going to grab... Okay. I think we can start... as everyone continues to eat lunch, if that's okay with everybody. So the measurement we are considering is number 47, which is inpatient consumer survey, and this is in work group 3. The measure developer is on the phone. Her name is Lucille. Record. Lucille, what's your last name?
Last name is Shah.
Spelled.
S-C-H-A-C-H-T.
Perfect. Okay. And you're from what organization?
It's an acronym, NRI, or NASPID Research Institute.
Okay. Thank you. So... Ian is going to start off with a brief description.
Yeah, Heidi is actually bringing the document up, so I can't bring it up at this moment. So she's going to read over the brief description, the numerator, denominator, statement.
Okay, Heidi's going to do the brief description.
Okay, so the brief description is survey developed to gather clients' evaluation of their inpatient care. Each domain is scored as the percentage of adolescent clients age 13 to 17 years and adult clients at time of discharge or at annual review who respond positively to the domain on the survey for a given month. 5 domains in the survey include outcome, dignity, rights, treatment, and environment. Questions in each domain are based on a standard 5-point scale evaluated on a scale from strongly disagree to strongly agree. And if I go down... I'll start with the denominator. It's always easier for me. Denominator, number of clients completing at least two items in the domain, and those domains, again, are outcome, dignity, rights, treatment, and environment. Each domain is calculated separately. The numerator statement is number of clients who respond positively to the domain.
Okay, I know that the end of the table caucused on this. Would you like to comment on this measure? Anybody at the end of the table? Bob or Carol or Maureen?
I think overall, we'll get into the specifics as we review this, but we felt that it definitely includes both some very specific outcomes as well as some perceptions of the quality of care that could have a strong impact on future outcomes. I think overall we felt that the submission was really strong, and we took a little time this morning to look at the actual survey instrument itself, I think we really liked what we saw. We can talk more about it as we get into it.
Yeah, one of the things I had noted in my comments that there was no information about the reading level. However, in our subsequent research this morning, we did come across something that suggested a 5.2 grade level for reading, which is good.
So, I mean, we thought it was in scope. I think we thought it was important and had a number of other virtues as well that we'll get into as we discuss it in more detail.
It says right in the description that it has something to do with outcome. So for now, we should just believe you about that, and then we'll see more. I don't know. It says it has the word, because the rest of it isn't necessarily. I mean, asking people about whether their rights are met. But it has the word, and you say it is, so I'm willing to open the door.
Well, I think, when you look at the instrument, you see even the sections that have to do with dignity and rights are the kind of feedback that an organization would like to have about how their care is perceived. We have it online here. We don't have it in. And I think they're actionable. This is the kind of feedback that you would be able to act upon if you got it.
Okay, so are there any questions for the measure developer before we get into it? We can start with importance.
We have to vote on scope or not?
Oh, vote on scope?
I thought that was part of the procedure or process.
What is it? Okay, is there a question about whether this is an in scope as an outcome?
I think we thought it was in scope, I think.
Yeah. Do you need to convince the group?
No. I thought we had a process, we had a vote to move on.
Okay, so we'll vote.
I don't think in this instance you need to. There seems to be general consensus.
Okay,
so I don't think we voted on everyone, only where there was a question.
Yeah. All right.
Importance to measure and report. Any discussion about that? This is a very patient-centered type measurement, which
it's still finding it a little hard to comment without knowing more of the details of what all the things are. I mean, if they're important, I mean, what are the things that are in there that are so important?
How about if we have the developer give a little summary? Lucille, would you be willing to do that?
Sure.
Thank you.
And are you looking for a summary on the kinds of items that are in the survey itself?
Yeah, especially the ones that relate to outcomes.
Okay. There are questions about, I plug the copy of it here. Thank you.
Annie, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Would anybody like, is there any other comments on the importance of this, of measuring this? Would you like to vote? Ready to vote on importance of measuring this? Okay. How many people think it is completely on importance to measure and report on this particular measure?
Is there anybody voting no?
This concept, right.
Thank you, Luke. This is the concept of this measure, not the particular measure, right? As with the others. Any partially? Okay. And any minimally? Or not at all? Or abstain? We have everybody? Ken, are you still on the phone? No, maybe not.
Okay. I had another question for the developer. The measure itself referenced that adolescents could take this measure. I didn't see any data in your test development that included adolescents. Were they included? Lucille?
During the initial pilot back in 2000, there were a few adolescents that were included in the study, but we felt that it really wasn't enough of a pool to truly assess it, so we continued to do assessment after that. Retested the integrity of the instrument in terms of whether the domains still held together for adolescents, and they did. And as we've used it over a number of years, our adolescents have grown, and their domains still hold together the same way as for the adult group.
Thank you.
Okay. Can we move down the screen down to the next category, which is scientific acceptability? Would anyone in the group like to comment on this?
As you look through the documentation provided by the developer, there's really quite a lot of data on reliability and such. Appears to be the case, and the developer, Lucille, you can maybe enlighten us on this. It looks as though a lot of that, what you documented in the application here, refers to work that was done a number of years ago in state hospitals. And my question was whether there's more you can say about reliability or validity testing in broader populations than state hospital inpatients, who are arguably different from the kinds of patients who are in psychiatric settings that are different from that.
Okay. We actually do have a number of requests from private hospitals. We actually do have several private hospitals that use the survey with us, along with state hospitals. We had a recent request from a VA hospital to use the instrument. I think that, based on their experiences in comparing available inpatient tools geared for psychiatric care, we've had a number of requests from the private hospitals, and they've used it as well. I've gotten all positive feedback from them and their use of it. And we do post our aggregate rates so that they can use that for benchmarking.
Okay.
Are you seeing any differences?
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I guess but this reliability and those kind. I mean, these are people who are these are organizations that are using it clinically and finding it helpful. It sounds like, but has it been tested in the kind of rigorous way that it was tested in the state hospitals in other settings?
Sorry, in that we've not done a second formalized test. We're currently doing a retest with our current participants, and we have maybe a half a dozen participants who are not state-run psychiatric hospitals. And we're reconfirming basically the factor structure, the domains that exist, that still hold together with the cohort that's using the study now, which is like 8 years after original development. So we didn't specifically do a retest with non-state hospitals, no.
Okay. And this is also a 28-item test at this point. Is that correct? And the original tested version was 43?
Yes. The one that we used in the pilot phase was 43 items. And from the analysis of the pilot phase, we dropped it down to a 28-item tool. And then what we've done internally is a sort of a confirmation test every year as the cohort using it has grown to confirm that the factor structure holds.
Okay.
28 items, and we're working on preparing a publication on that.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
So you're saying, to summarize it, this has only been validated on a state hospital population from data that's 20 years old?
Well, it's about 10 years old.
The data's about 10 years old.
Okay. I mean, I think that's a weakness, but you know, compared to other things we've been looking at, that's pretty darn good. You're right.
I had one other question for the developer. You say that now as you're reviewing your data and reanalyzing your data currently, during your current process, have you given any consideration to taking a look at or segmenting the group that are from the non-public psychiatric facilities to try to get a sense of whether or not there's a difference in their responses?
We do not have a large enough cohort to do that yet, but what we have done internally for our own users, we've produced a variety of stratified reports, one of them being for forensic clients versus non-forensic clients. To be sure that folks have benchmarks for similar patient groups. And we also do more age breakouts in our comparisons so that adolescents are all being compared in their scores versus older adults are being compared. But we don't currently have a large enough cohort of non-state facilities to do that analysis. We do allow people who are not participating with us to use this. They don't have to send us their data, which is why we don't actually have a large enough cohort to do that test.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or discussions on scientific acceptability? Are we ready to go for a vote? How many would vote completely? Partially? Minimally? Not at all? Or abstain? Okay. And now we'll go on to the next category, which is usability.
Maureen, I'd just like to confirm, my understanding is that this is geared for a 5.2 reading level, grade-wise?
Yes, it was rated at a 5.2 reading level.
Good.
So that we feel confident with the use among adolescents, but would not be confident with use among children.
And I believe this also has a Spanish language version now, is that right?
Yes, it actually has two Spanish translations, one done in Texas and one done for Puerto Rico.
Excellent. Thank you.
Reva?
This is for inpatient psychiatric hospitals. And does anyone know, are there other surveys that exist that are in use by other hospitals that really try and capture the same kind of data?
Luke?
Yes, there are. proprietary, though.
You know of one?
Which one?
Prescani. In
development. Does Prescani have a, is it specific to psychiatry?
Microphones.
Is Prescani specific to psychiatry, or is it the generic? They use the generic one.
Specific.
They have a specific version for psychiatry.
And this is beyond, you walked in a little late, this is beyond the patient experience. This has some other dimensions to it as well.
This has outcomes.
Mm-hmm. So, can I tell you a question? When you say it has outcomes, does it have a pre and post? So how does it do outcomes?
It asks the patients whether they feel that as a result of treatment they are better able to cope in social situations, whether they're less bothered by symptoms and that kind of thing. So it's asking patients their judgment about whether they've improved.
It's consumer and perception.
And when is it administered?
At the time of discharge or in patients who are there for an extended period of time periodically.
Yeah. It says during the month of client discharge or during month of annual review for the client.
Does the group that does this also administer another patient experience questionnaire like Prescani?
Lucille?
No, they do not.
Okay, and remind me, you may have said it already, how long it takes the patient to fill this out?
It's a relatively short survey. I think that most of our hospitals have indicated it's 10 or 15 minutes. Oftentimes they will have patient advocates available to help a patient understand what the question is asking, if they need that, or to actually physically check off boxes if they need help to actually do the mechanics of the survey.
Now, is the potential overlap of this with Prescani, are you familiar with that? Is there some, and is that a harmonization issue if there are?
No, because they're proprietary.
Okay, so that's a non-issue.
Yeah, I mean, I would like, this is probably more of a feasibility issue, but I would like to highlight that 10 to 15 minutes in a setting where there may be 5 or 6 admissions and discharges a day, and as is the case in the private sector frequently, may be prohibitively time-consuming. I mean, I think that's just I guess it may be a question I would ask Lucille to respond to. Does she find that do people resist filling it out? Do people have to be sort of held in the chair while they respond to the question or something like this?
A discharge planning group, so they'll have a group of clients who are ready for discharge, and they'll help with the planning of discharge, and this will be one of the things that will occur then. We have a number of facilities who just hand it to the client as part of the discharge transition. The client will do it in and print it back in. It's 100% voluntary, so if a client chooses not to answer it, that's still okay. So for many clients, I would guess that, they can do this in a minute or two.
Right.
For other clients, there's an opportunity for assistance reading questions or asking questions. It's provided in more of a networked, assisted, assistance available kind of atmosphere.
Do you have, and I might have missed this or didn't see it in the write-up, actual response rates in use?
Yes, we do actually provide those back to our hospitals based on how many discharges they had in a given month, how many surveys should they have completed. We also ask our hospitals to track that for themselves of how many responses they're getting. We've had some low response rates as low as 20%. We've got a couple of facilities who have phenomenal response rates up over 80%.
So on average,
I would say it's probably around 40 to 50% of people being discharged.
that are responding to the survey at most of the hospitals. There are a number of hospitals that continue to have really low rates, and they work on that. And there are some hospitals that have phenomenally high rates.
Okay, that sounds good.
In trying to understand those discrepancies across facilities with response rates, you know, those are in the range of health literacy problems in our healthcare consumer audience. And I wonder if there's anything that has been done or needs to be done to try to assess the extent to which limited health literacy actually affects the response rates or the ability of patients to do this. I understand you've talked about how some facilities provide assistance to those patients who need it in filling out a form, but it sounds like that's one area where there might be some built-in inequities in terms of if people with low levels of literacy are not in the pool of people who actually are responding.
Well, that is an area of concern when you have a low response rate on how generalizable your results are. And we caution facilities to have low response rates about the generalizability of that and to look at what their practices are around their distribution methods, their return methods, their availability of assistance, as ways to increase their response rates. And some facilities have found that by having these sort of discharge planning groups that their response rates go up. So, and some facilities have been able to adopt that. Some of that is a staffing issue, the availability of staff or of our consumer advocate staff to be able to provide that service.
Some facilities would actually have a group in an inpatient setting where you're filling out your...
I had a question. George was asking if he could take a look at the reliability and validity information that we had, that this work group had. Has everyone had the opportunity to look at that, or do we need to have the developer sort of summarize the research on what they did with reliability and validity? Or are there questions on that?
I guess I'm more interested in the usability part of this.
I just wanted to make a point on a different dimension of usability, which is the usability of the information that comes out of this process. And I think one of the things that I at least struck me as a real positive is that there's already a track record for public reporting on a website that gets updated regularly, so that there is the ability for, I guess it's reported at the facility level or the provider level, but there is already an infrastructure in place for public access to the outcome measures. And I just thought, compared to most of the rest of what we're looking at, that's a huge step forward.
One of the unique aspects of this was that this was developed with consumer input, as well as I believe they took it to the MSIP people as well.
So are we ready to vote on usability?
Yeah.
Okay. Completely? Anybody votes for completely on usability? Partially?
Everybody here.
Ken? I think he's off. And was that everybody?
That's 15.
Okay, and so now we'll go to feasibility. Any questions from the group or work group three, or comments or questions for the developer? Jeff.
Is there any issue of social acceptability here, particularly when you're helping users complete this? Any fear of sanction, unintended consequences?
Well,
And have you looked at that?
One of the things that we have on the survey tool itself is a clear reminder to the facility using it that they are responsible for telling the consumer that that this.
Are these done anonymously then in any way? I mean, I realize if you're doing it in a group, it's not very anonymous, but is anonymity something that can be achieved?
Yes. Actually, the facilities have that option, and if they want it to be an identified survey, they have to inform the consumers that it is an identified survey, and that includes using a coding number that they can decode back to the consumer. And we've done significant training with our facilities about, putting code numbers on there that they can decode. That means it is not anonymous, and the consumer needs to know that. If a consumer wants to self-identify, they can write their names on there. There's nothing that says they can't do that. It's really a facility consumer choice about anonymity.
Is there any concern that it might be hard to interpret the results if this were being used for comparative purposes, if the person looking at the comparative data didn't know whether the data were anonymously obtained or not? Because, I mean, I've certainly been, when I get my car serviced, been prevailed upon by the service director to be sure to fill this out and be sure to put all fives here. And the I mean, you could conceivably do better in a setting where somebody this was being administered by an enthusiastic staff member who was encouraging you to give positive responses. I mean, it would seem to me if you're trying to evaluate the institutional responses to this, it would be helpful to know exactly how the data were being presented to the patients at the time of discharge. And you would think you'd have a lot more confidence in data that were collected anonymously than data that might be collected with the influence of the provider of care. I'm just wondering if that's come up or if that's been a concern.
Well, we do actually, in reporting purposes to us, in developing our comparative information that we provide back, we do ask whether the survey was anonymous or not. We have not yet stratified by that, but we've done some testing over the years to see if there are any significant differences in the responses and the ratings themselves when surveys were anonymous versus surveys not anonymous. And one of the disadvantages of being a large system is that once your N gets really big, you can get differences that are significant from a statistics standpoint but have no practical meaning. So what we found when we used smaller Ns is that there were some cases where there were marginal differences between anonymous and non-anonymous surveys, but as our population grows, that difference waters out.
Okay. Lucille, could you give me an example of how you've used this data to change outcomes on one of your inpatient units?
Okay. Well, I can tell you some examples from our facilities. The facilities have taken this information and looked at their score, say, on the outcome domain, where they say they were scoring only 75%, which is about, I think, what the average is running right now. And then what we do is we provide them with an actual score for each one of the questions in that domain. And then they developed a plan to address the particular question that was scoring the worst. Assuming that that would help to improve overall outcomes. And they've done that with all of the domains, the outcomes domain as well as rights and dignity and environment. We've also had facilities who have worked on response rates and looked at, holding a focus group with the consumers around their issues around completing surveys, their concerns, and then looking at strategies to help improve response rates.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion? We're on feasibility. Ready to vote on feasibility? Completely? Partially? Minimally? Not at all, or abstain? Any comments from the public before we vote to recommend or not to recommend this measure to go forward to NQF?
No comments.
Thank you. Okay, we're ready to vote. Any discussion or questions before we vote on whether to recommend it go forward? Okay, all in favor of recommending this go forward?
That's something
whoa.
That we...
Whoa! A new milestone.
Unanimous.
Go now?
Congratulations, Lucille.
Thank you very much. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the next step and our cast related to that. And thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you for putting together such a well-documented and comprehensive proposal. Okay, so our the next thing we're going to do is our 1 o'clock. We're a little bit behind time, right?
Looking to see, Peter, are you on the line?
Can he hear you, Ian?
Peter, are you on the line?
Is anyone from University of Washington on the line?
University of Washington?
Do you think they left? They may not have joined yet.
Okay, how about the 1:30? Anybody from Western Psych on the phone?
He was joining at 1:30.
So can you try and email or contact U Washington people?
He just said that he was on the line from the email.
It's Peter.
University of Washington, are you there? Oslo?
No.
I can try following up, but his email says he's here.
Huh. What line is he on?
Yeah, really. Does he hear us?
We don't know.
No, but if he's sending an email back, maybe we can find out.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that we should go ahead and begin discussing number 14. While Ian tries to get Peter from University of Washington on the phone. And number 14 is a new measure. Do you have number 14, Heidi?
I certainly do.
Okay, while Ian's trying to contact Peter, Heidi can give us the basics on number 14.
Okay, so number 14, psychiatrist rated assessment of psychiatric inpatient's clinical status. The measure provides a standardized rated 36-item tool to assess adult inpatient psychiatric patients with respect to their clinical status, symptom, and behavior domains. Numerator. There is no denominator. The numerator is the tool allows psychiatrists to rate a spectrum of psychiatric symptom and behavior domains of inpatient psychiatry patients using 36 items with concrete behavioral anchor points.
This one was in your group.
Yeah,
Because I think that this one, at least on the list, is listed as potentially out of scope, so that's what we need to address first.
They really don't discuss doing the survey at point A and then point B.